Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. And as always, we talk about personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm so excited for my guest today. We are going to have an incredible conversation. First, couple quick announcements, though. Head over to the links in the show notes. You are going to find ways to connect with my amazing guest. You'll find ways to find my own book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by Michael Beckwith, Marcy Shimoff, Bob Doyle, Anita Morjani, John Gray, lots of incredible thought leaders out there. You'll find ways to sponsor the podcast. You'll find ways to take my courses, my coaching, some free downloads. And as always, this podcast is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. We are doing incredible things in the personal development realm. We have amazing events almost every month. We just had Dr. Joe Vitale on stage and Joseph McClendon and Sharon Lecter. So come be a part of all of this. Connect on social media. Stay connected. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality and mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science, diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools, and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. All right, so with me today, I have TJ Woodward. So TJ is a best-selling author, inspirational speaker, and revolutionary recovery expert who has helped countless people through his simple yet powerful teachings. He's the author of many best-selling books, as well as the co-author of their accompanying workbooks. TJ is also the creator of the Conscious Recovery Method, which is a groundbreaking and effective approach to viewing and treating addiction. So welcome, TJ. I'm so happy you're here.
All right, TJ. So I always start all of my conversations out the exact same way, and that is by asking my guests what their origin story is. So what is it that put you on this journey of becoming a recovery expert and this renowned inspirational speaker?
Wow. Well, I mean, I could tell a long version, but I'll try to do a semi. How about if I do a medium-sized version? Okay. I went through my own addiction in my late teens, got sober right before I turned 21, kind of ironically, and that kind of began my spiritual journey. Going back, though, I can remember being a very little child and being absolutely filled with joy. And the reason I always like to interject that into the conversation is, in my experience, that's the natural state of a human being: loving, open, present, able to feel feelings. So, like, I came into the world as a very joyful person through a series of events, like being born on planet Earth and the family that I lived with and my educational system, et cetera. I had a profound experience of closing my heart and started believing I was broken, which led to the addiction. So that's kind of the very beginning of the origin story.
Yeah, I think that's so relatable. And I love that you said that's the natural state that we're all meant to be in. And it makes me think of that idea that personal growth is really unlearning all of those things that people kind of place on top of us that we internalize, right?
That's right. And I think that's a very different paradigm than a lot of the models. I know in my early 20s, when I sort of began my spiritual quest, I absolutely thought there was something fundamentally wrong with me and I needed to learn or attain or become. And then at some point realized, as you just said, it's unlearning, and returning to a greater reality. In other words, it's not an outward seeking, it's an inward remembering. And that really changed everything for me. But it did take me a decade to figure that out.
Yeah, totally. I love saying that on these shows too, because there's no quick fix, right? The people who, you know, are out there doing this work, helping others, went through it themselves, and they don't want other people to suffer for decades like they did, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's really it. I think about in terms of the recovery piece, when I was around 18 months sober, I found myself suicidal. And the paradigm at the time was something like, don't worry about anything but not drinking, just go be of service. And I thought, well, that's great, but I literally want to die and don't know what's happening in here. And I met a woman who took me on this journey of unlearning and returning and, you know, on a spiritual quest that lasted for at least a decade for me to understand that, yeah, this is really about integrating. This is about unlearning. And it has become my life's purpose to share this with someone so they don't have to wait 18 months or 2 years or 3 years into their recovery to get that information.
So I'd love to hear what you did during that spiritual journey. Like, what did you learn? What did you try that really worked? You know, what pathways did you go down? What made a difference?
Well, my first spiritual teacher, her name is Mary Helen, and she made her transition in 1998, but she was just this incredible, incredibly enlightened being that just had this beautiful energy about her. And so that was the beginning for me. It was just being witnessed by her through a different lens, right? Because I really had so much shame. I felt like I was just swimming in it and couldn't get out. And she saw this potential within me. That took me on a journey of traveling to India with her and doing a meditation practice and chanting. And I tried so many different things. I discovered the New Thought movement at the time through Unity. I just was exploring a lot of different pathways, which all ultimately led back to this inner journey, as we've already said.
That's really cool. I didn't know that you'd done any of those things. How exciting.
Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful journey. And I've continued to realize there's so many different pathways to truth, right? And when I say truth, I don't mean like the truth, this is the truth and others are wrong, but this deep spiritual truth that only can be discovered through these practices in my experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So if people are in it now, like what's the first step that they can take? You know, if they haven't found that amazing enlightened being that's going to take them to India to chant and do meditation, like where do they even get started?
You know, I think the starting point for me and in my model conscious recovery that I created in 2017, the foundational principle is underneath all addictive behavior is an essential self that is whole and perfect. And the reason I start with that is if that's the starting point, that's a paradigm shift from there's something wrong with me and I need to fix myself to there's this place within me that's unharmed and unharmable. And the first step might be remembering that each of us came into the world as that whole and perfect being. And as we've said, it's really about unlearning and that paradigm shift. It is like a mindset shift. Oh, I'm not broken and I need to find the perfect workshop or teacher or practice. It's more of a, oh, wow, I'm already complete. Let me remember that.
I really love that so much. So do you think that all addiction comes from, I don't know, like trauma that we've gone through or like, you know, like we said, society or adults in our lives putting all that on top of us when we're young, like, is that the root of addiction? Like having that severance to your true self?
Yeah, I love that severance to your true self. Absolutely. I think there are many different paths that lead to addiction. I don't think there's a one size fits all approach, certainly to recovery. And I also don't think there's one root cause of every person's addiction. I will say, though, in my experience, the root causes of addiction are unresolved trauma, spiritual disconnection, and toxic shame. That came through not only my own experience, but also I started working in the behavioral health field in 2008, and I realized that was the common denominator of every person who I had worked with. So, you know, there's a debate. Is it a disease? Is it not? Is it genetic? Do we have a predisposition? I think there's a physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual aspect to addiction and recovery. But I do think those three things are something that I've seen in about 100% of the people I've worked with.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a pretty high percentage. So I feel like you can say that confidently. It makes sense, right? It makes sense when we lose that connection and we're feeling bathed in shame that like we're trying to fill that void with something, right?
Yeah. When I feel broken, I look to the world to try to heal that brokenness. And there's nothing inherently wrong about that, but that can become addictive, right? In my story, like I said, at 7, when I decided there was something fundamentally wrong with me, it wasn't really a thought because a 7-year-old doesn't even have a brain that's developed. It was more of an energy I started holding, a frequency. And I was walking around the world. And because I felt broken, I just kept replicating that experience. So drugs and alcohol brought so much relief. And if I look back and I think, of course I became addicted. It felt really good to not have to live with that psychic pain for so long. So really, addiction in its broadest sense is anything that we're using outside of ourselves to try to assuage this sense of brokenness that we start to repetitively use. So in that way, really, if we're honest, I think all of us can say, oh, I'm probably addicted to something, if that using that definition.
I know, as you were talking, I was like, oh my God, I feel like social media, so many people, and like that validation dopamine hit.
Yes, absolutely. And we could do a whole conversation just on the addiction to the drama. I think drama is one thing that our culture is highly addicted to, polarization, us and them. All of that can be very addictive. And as you say, we get this dopamine hit. And a lot of it is, oh, I don't have to focus on what's going on here when I'm focusing on someone else or something else.
Totally. And then if we're thinking about like the law of attraction, like whatever we focus on, we're calling more of. So when we're focusing on us versus them, we're calling in more division to the world, right? It's not doing the world any favors.
That's right. So if I feel broken, I see the world is broken. And then I focus, like I said, then we try to have someone or something outside of us bring relief. But the unconscious part is I'm going to continue to replicate it over and over and over again. So in my journey, I felt unlovable. So what kind of relationships did I choose? Perfectly great people, but not available to love me for all kinds of different reasons. And in the beginning, it was like, oh, it's their fault. Or if they could just love me, I could be free. And right now in our culture, the sort of pop psychology that is out there is calling everyone a narcissist. And then how do we get rid of these toxic people? And that can be an important step, but that doesn't really do the deeper inner work or acknowledge that we're also the one choosing this. We don't want to shift from blaming them to blaming ourselves. But when I shift the focus away from them and labeling them as narcissistic and start asking, what is it about me that I keep choosing this and how can I become free? We can actually start to shift that.
I love that you said that so much. And it's so funny. So many conversations on this show come back to this idea of blaming outside people and events for your own suffering rather than taking accountability. Because it's hard to take accountability, right? It's hard to do that inner work and turn the lens inwards. And it's so much easier to cast blame because then you get to be the victim or you get pity or you get to be the martyr, but like you don't get to step into your own power and heal.
Yeah. And it's interesting. And everything you just said, and I also get a sense of superiority if I'm judging someone else. Right? If I'm labeling someone as narcissistic or saying this work situation is toxic, then I can sort of be in this place of superiority when really what I'm trying to do is heal something that's happening much deeper. And I agree with you, it is hard. But at some point, I realized that it was much harder to actually continue to blame others than it was to be accountable. And how do we get to that tipping point? I'm not sure. My friend, Dr. Sue Mortar, says life is difficult and a struggle until it isn't. And I love that, right? Because that was me. Oh, life is so hard. Why do I keep replicating these? And why do I keep attracting these people? And when I did the deeper healing, it's like, oh, this is actually so much easier than living the other way.
Because when you're living on that frequency of joy and love, like more of that sends your way. You're looking out for those things, those opportunities. So yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
It's frequency, right? It's all just frequency, which is such a cool thing to know.
Yeah. So you made some comments about, you know, all of this being unconscious. So how does someone, you know, let's say, like, for your example, you were dating all the wrong people. Like, how does someone start to make the unconscious more conscious so that they can start to do this work? Like, how does someone just get out of that mindset?
Well, I think I can answer it a couple ways. Looking back, the way that I did it was it had to get painful enough for me to start to realize, you know, I'm the common denominator in these last five relationships that ended very similarly. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I at some point went into blame of self, and that was even more painful. I went from blaming others to blaming myself. And then I realized that blame is actually a really low frequency, but curiosity and accountability, I wonder what wants to be healed here. I wonder what a different possibility is. So the way I know something's in the unconscious is simply those patterns that keep repeating over and over and over again. And then I can start to explore. I wonder what's at the root of this. And just through that contemplation, we might start to discover it.
Yeah, that's such a good, I don't know, good thing to call out, because everyone has those repeating patterns. And it brings us right back to, like, so it's so easy for people to be like, oh, well, that's just because of the way society is, or the way whatever, fill in the blank. But yeah, like, you are the common denominator, you know, and especially in today's day and age, you know, it's so heated with identity politics and social issues. It's so easy to just blame outside things. So I love that we're bringing this all to light. So you mentioned that your product that you've put together is called Conscious Recovery. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So when I started working in the addiction treatment field in 2008, I had already been in recovery myself for over 20 years. So I had a foundation, and I had gone on this inner journey. And a lot of what we have been talking about, like, you know, there's no finish line to healing. As much as I wanted one, I thought I was going to reach this place where I was no longer going to have the human experience. That's not what I'm saying here. But at 20 years sober, or 22 years sober, I was at a place where I had done enough of the deeper work that I felt ready to enter the field and to, you know, be of service in however I could. And a couple of things were really striking to me. One was how many times people were coming back to treatment, like, over and over and over again. And the second one was clinicians, well-meaning, were trained to diagnose and treat. But what we know spiritually is if I look at someone as broken, there's a higher probability that they're going to experience that. The observer effect, right? Quantum mechanics is now measuring that. So I started asking myself, I wonder if there's a different possibility. And I created Conscious Recovery out of the question of what is wanted and needed in this field that would start to shift that paradigm.
I love that you just brought quantum physics experiments to that, because we talk about that so much with creating our own reality, but actually seeing someone that way, that just, like, blew my mind that you just said that. Because it's true, if you see someone a certain way, you're just putting out that energy towards them, and they're picking up on that.
Yes. And we know that life is energy. So my passion, my greatest passion now, is training clinicians. And training is an interesting word. It's really helping clients and clinicians, primarily now, clinicians understand or feel what happens when we have an energetic exchange. Our clients in recovery are coming to us at a very vulnerable time, but they're also very attuned. Who's safe? What's the energy here? So if the clinician is trained to look for what's wrong in this person already has so much shame, they feel broken. So if I come in with my clipboard and my pen and I'm thinking, oh, it might be bipolar, it might be this, maybe you have this, they start to feel that. And I'm not saying there's not a place for that, but in addition to that, I want to start inviting us to ask what might get created if I would start to look for the wholeness in them, start to realize they have the ability to heal, that they don't just have a chronic disease. There's something so much more about them. And that's really what happens in the quantum field. If I'm looking for the wholeness, that person will start to experience it for themselves. Then they become accountable and responsible for their own healing. It's an exciting thing.
What a beautiful way to just look at humanity as a whole, right? Like outside of recovery too. If you can approach every single person as this beautiful, whole, complete being lacking nothing, like that will send ripples effects through humanity.
Yeah. Can you imagine politically?
Oh my gosh.
If we were all to say, okay, this person who has a different point of view with me, let me look for the wholeness within them. And then I can be curious about their point of view. And through that curiosity, we can actually maintain connection. There was a point in my life when I thought I was my opinions. And I also thought that people who disagreed with me couldn't be in my life. It was too scary for me. So there is something much deeper happening here. And I now have the ability, as we all do, to maintain connection, even when there are opposing viewpoints.
I really, really love that you brought that up because, you know, this might not air for several weeks, but we're recording this at the end of February, and there's still a lot of turmoil in the U.S. after the last election. And I have friends on both sides of the aisle, and their social media feeds are very different right now.
Yes.
There's a lot of hate. There's a lot of just division. And there's a lot of that us versus them. So how do we get to that place? How do we get to that place where we're helping heal humanity and helping people see each other as whole?
Well, let's back up a little and also ask, how do we get to this polarization? Because I think within that is the answer that we might be looking for. If we look back, there was a time when we lived in caves, and if we walked out of the cave alone, we might get eaten, right? So that became part of our DNA. And I say became part of because we now understand that DNA gets formed over generations. Generational trauma affects DNA. There's a lot that science is measuring now that to me, it's very exciting because science and spirituality are starting to meet in a really cool way right now. But we had to find a tribe. We had to find a group of people to protect us. So there's something that's very innate within us or an automatic response to find our people. Mm-hmm. And that's been happening throughout time. And I understand it, but it's time now, if we want to evolve, it's time for us to look beyond that. And it is possible. We have this idea, and social media fuels it, that we're fundamentally different than people. We've been told we live in a polarized country, but I actually think it's more that we've been conditioned to have polarized thinking. I'm literally looking at the world through the lens of us and them and good and bad and right and wrong, and that's the primary disease of the mind.
I love all of that. It's such a good point because I mean, there is no good or bad, really. Like, good people do bad things, bad people do good things. Like, everyone's just a human here having a human experience. How do we like get to people though? Like, I want to help heal the world. I guess we just start with our own messages, our own stories, and hope they get out there, right?
Yeah. And I think that's really it. When I work with clinicians, for example, and this is an example of how all of us can do it, I will often say the only thing I really need to do for my client is my own healing. So perhaps I could say the only thing I really need to do for the world is my own healing. I mean, Lao Tzu, I think 3,000 years ago, said, the greatest gift I can offer the world is my own transformation. That message is still true 3,000 years later. So that's giving us some information that this isn't new. This isn't new, this idea of us and them and good and bad. And I think it's important to acknowledge, because someone watching or listening right now might think we're saying, let's pretend like nothing's happening or let's look away from it. Actually, it's okay to speak to or to recognize the division that's happening or things that we agree or don't agree with. But I think the deeper question is, how can I be a conscious being in the midst of that rather than being at odds or at war with? We've been fighting for so long. Maybe there's nothing wrong with fighting, but are we ready for peace? And if we're ready for more peace, how do we start to live that?
Yeah, that's a really good point because Yeah, well, first of all, like our inner world creates our reality, mm-hmm. right? Like our inner world creates our outer world. So I love that you said like we have to be that. And this isn't spiritual bypassing because what you focus on creates your reality. It, like the universe is like the Facebook algorithm. If you're just getting angry at things, right? I stole it from Julia Cannon, who I love, but it's so true. It's like whatever you focus on, whatever you get emotional about, it's like, oh, you like that? I'm going to send more of that your way. So
I'm making that expression because I actually about 3-4 years ago did a talk called Consciousness is an Algorithm. And I talked about exactly what you're saying, that like, it's very simple. When we click on something, whether we're for it or against it, Facebook or Instagram, and definitely TikTok, gives us more of that. That's an algorithm. It simply means whatever we focus on grows. So if I'm fighting the world, or if I believe the world is broken, the world will give me more of that. It's not magic at all. It's actually just pure science, right? I only see what I expect to see. We call it confirmation bias now, but the algorithm is what I focus on grows. So I love that you're bringing that into the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you did a talk on it. But it's true. It's like when you're getting angry about something, you're just going to get more things that confirm you're angry. And especially in the day and age with the internet, it's like you're going to find like quote unquote evidence to support any argument you have, right? But you don't always, like, you don't have to be right or make anyone else out to be wrong. That just takes away your peace of mind. So I'd love to hear if you have any thoughts about that too, because I know you talk a little bit about not having to be right and living into the question and all of that. So let's pivot there.
Well, for me, I want to also acknowledge, where does this sense of I need to be right come from? And I'll share this from my own journey. It may or may not be true for someone else. It's true for me that if I have a big reaction, it's usually not what's happening. It's usually something much deeper. A Course in Miracles says, what I'm upset about is not what I'm upset about. And working with clients, that has been true for me. And it has proven to be remarkable. Because I used to, when working with clients, a client would be upset about something and we'd talk about that something. And then I realized, actually, she's not up. There's this huge reaction. Bessel van der Kolk says, trauma doesn't show up as a memory. It shows up as a reaction. So if that button gets pushed, the commonly used word is trigger. If something triggers us, I call it activate. A wound got touched. I have an explosive reaction. It's usually something from the past that's not healed. And so if I'm able to allow myself to feel and be present, when I notice myself going into this idea of right and wrong, I can pause and if I can invite myself, what am I experiencing? What am I feeling without the story? Then I can start to question, and open-ended questions can start to expand our consciousness.
I love that you brought in ACIM. So I guess you kind of answered it a little bit, but I'm still going to ask this question. So you started out saying when you talk about clients, or when you talk with clients about what they're upset about, you used to talk about like the actual thing, and then you stop doing that. So if someone comes to you and they're upset about something, how do you kind of navigate that conversation to get down to the root? Because I think that's just a great skill that people can use on themselves, can use when in like conversation with others, just even outside of recovery.
Well, I think it starts with honoring the person's experience. Holding space is a term that gets really overused, but it's such a valuable quality to have. What does it actually mean? It means that I allow someone to have their emotional experience without trying to shift it or change it. In other words, I simply witness them and I don't engage in that. I just let it be. Tell me more. I think the thing that has worked for me, and it used to be a little bit more of a formula before it became a natural way of being. And the formula was, when I thought I wanted to tell them something, instead I would ask 3 questions. And if I couldn't think of a question, I would just say, tell me more. And I realized that tell me more is actually the best question to ask. And then when someone gets through all of that, and the emotion, and I have a couple of stories that just are profound to me in this process, that they start to naturally regulate, and then they themselves will start to realize it's something much deeper. And then I can ask questions about what might be underneath it. What else are you experiencing? is this familiar in your life? Do you think there's something deeper happening? Do you think it might be something in your past that you're re-experiencing? Those kind of questions, once we've built the trust, can open the person up to realizing that this big reaction isn't actually about now, it's about then.
That's brilliant. I love that formula. I'm totally going to use that. So I'd love for you to share one or two of those stories that just blew your mind.
Yeah, I mean, one of them, and I tell this story so often, but it was such a pivotal moment for me in my professional journey, but also just in my spiritual journey. I was the person at one point many years ago, the person that they would call in when the client was dysregulating, upset, angry, and a client was in her room and they knocked on the door and said, you need to move downstairs to the basement right now. We're going to move you to a different room. And she had this room with a beautiful view. It was in Sausalito. She had a view of San Francisco and the bay, and she had the big sunken bathtub, and she was reactive. I was told I was going to be able to keep this room and I'm out of here. And she was packing her bags and they asked if she'd meet with me. The tech, the counselor came to me and he literally rolled his eyes and said, such and such is being so entitled. She won't leave her room, right? So now she's packing her bags. He labeled her. There was resistance. And I knew she's having this massive reaction. It's not really about the room. It's something deeper. So as I said, what she's upset about is not what she's upset about. That's always my mantra when walking toward these conversations. And also, I'm going to see the potential within her, or I'm going to see that little whole and perfect person underneath all this anger and rage, and just let her have her feelings. So sat with her, she talked. And then she just suddenly, and she started crying. And I said, can you speak to the tears? And she said, yeah, I've never told this to anyone, but I was sexually abused in my basement. And so when she was knock, 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 and it was a man at the door, right? Sudden and very intense, moved to the basement now, all that got activated. And that's where her healing could begin. Because I was able to get her with her therapist. We got a trauma specialist, and like her recovery and her journey really began that moment. And how easy would it be to have missed that by saying, oh yeah, you can keep your room. You're upset. Or, okay, go then, fine. I guess you'll come back when you're ready. That's kind of the paradigm, right?
You're making me tear up. I love that story so much. And you're right. Because like it's so easy to be like, okay, I just don't want to upset her. She can just keep the room, but you wouldn't have uncovered that.
Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, it seems like, I mean, I know this, but people just want to be seen and heard, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, and the important piece to this too, is she wasn't even necessarily aware that's what was happening. Mm-hmm. She probably would have said it was about the room. And on one level it was, right? She wanted the view, right? So like the label of entitled is the other piece. And it was just holding her like, wow, this is a really big reaction. And I use that story when I'm working with counselors and therapists and clinicians, because our work can actually be much easier if we don't think I need to know what's going on with her, because I had no idea that's what was happening. As you said, I'm going to hold myself in a space of receptivity and let her have her feelings. Not that I can let her have her feelings, but I'm not going to try to block them. I'm just going to be there with her and then let's see what happens. And that was such a beautiful thing. And I thought, wow, this work is really much easier than I thought.
Well, it is, but it also takes a very, I don't want to say special kind of person, but someone who's done a lot of healing work themselves to be able to be in that place.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to, in my mind, apply this to real world situations. Not that that's not real world, but not everyone listening is going to be working in recovery, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, most people have, you know, the quote unquote difficult person in their life, the person who complains a lot or is always very negative. Like, how do you take this and use it on those kind of people? And is there ever a point, because we were talking earlier where you were saying, like, you know, cut out the term like toxic individuals, right? Like, is there ever a point where it's healthier to like have that boundary, or is it really just about letting these people be seen and heard and then you kind of have that breakthrough?
Well, I think it's interesting. I love that you're asking this question, because in my experience, this starts to naturally work itself out as we do our deeper healing, right? As I've done my own deeper healing, people tend to walk away, or people tend to come into my life, or sometimes relationships get transformed. And, you know, I remind myself that I'm the toxic person in someone's life too, you know, because sometimes we have a sacred contract, right? Like, if I think about some of my friends I've had for decades, you know, we've had these old patterns that we go back into, right? So my walking away from someone has helped them too, right? So that takes me out of the like, oh, I'm the healed one and they're the toxic one, right? Because each of us get to play these roles. And of course there are times, you know, for example, in the most dramatic example, if someone's being physically abused for something, for example, we're not going to say to them, well, you create your own reality, you know, just stay in the relationship, right? We're going to help them step away from that, but there's going to be deeper healing, because most of the time on some level they've chosen that. And I want to be really clear, we're not blaming the victim in a way we're actually absolutely empowering the person to get them out of the relationship and then doing the deeper work of healing, because if they feel worthy, they're not going to go back and choose that again, right? So we step out of the paradigm of the victim villain game, which is never ending.
Totally. And yes, the victim villain game is never ending. So let's say you do have a friend who's in that abusive relationship, and you know, you do all the things that you've talked about so far. You ask the open-ended questions, you hold the space, you allow them to feel. And like, at what point, I mean, do you ever offer like spiritual insights? Do you ever say, you know, like, in an empowering, encouraging way that like we create our own reality? Like, does it ever get to that? Or do we just be that beacon? We do our own inner work and let people rise to us. Like, how do people, yeah, go ahead. You get what I'm saying.
I would say it's been both and in my experience. I think as you're pointing to, and you know, several people have been given credit for this quote, but I like it, whoever said it, a lighthouse doesn't go around trying to save boats, it just stands there shining, right? And so that's one way, like, let me just be this beacon. And I, you know, I'm constantly doing my own inner work. I never think like, oh, I'm the enlightened one that's here to like shed my spiritual wisdom on the world. But
you wouldn't be here anymore, right? You'd be done.
Right. Well, and maybe that's when we're like, okay, I'm next. I don't know, right? But I do think there's a place for, you know, I go to clients, but it works in every relationship. Sometimes if I name my own emotional experience, it can be useful. I have been with someone who is reporting, you know, I'm in this relationship and, you know, this person's abusing me and I don't know how to get out and maybe this is all I deserve, or they try to and go back. They have so much shame because they're back. Saying or naming, I just want to name that I feel really sad right now and I feel really scared for you. Sometimes naming that can really help. I'm not trying to fix them or tell them what they need to do, because the greatest gift I ever gave myself was to understand that I don't know what someone else needs to do. And so being curious with them, but also sometimes just naming my experience can have a profound effect.
I like that a lot. And I like that you just said you don't claim to know anyone else's experience or like what they need. And it kind of goes with that idea of like, we can't really fix anyone, right? Like, we can't like force people to change, even though we want to force people to change. Like, we really can't. We can only kind of subtly influence by changing ourselves, right?
Well, yeah. And if I believe that people aren't broken, then no one needs fixing.
Yeah.
Right? So when I get into that, then I'm like, oh, let me be curious with you. Let me be here beside you, right? It also reminds me sort of a parallel process when, like, for example, when someone's in a great amount of grief, they usually don't need us to try to shift or fix anything. As a matter of fact, what they probably really need is a space to feel, right? And so a lot of times we say things like, oh, I'm so sorry, or I'm sorry for your loss, or this, I've also had someone who died, or God forbid, we might say, well, she's in a better place, which is just not useful, right? Instead, let me sit with you. I don't need to say anything. Let me be present with you. There's something so powerful about witnessing someone at these moments in their life that allows a greater possibility for them, right? And if I believe that it's my job to fix, people are going to feel that for sure.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the grief thing. Yeah, I lost my dad 2 years ago, and I can't tell you how horrible it was to hear everyone be like, I'm sorry for your loss.
Right?
It's like, I don't need you to say that. Like,
right.
Just give me a hug, let me be angry or whatever it is, right?
Right, right.
So I'm just looking through, like, is there anything we haven't touched on today that you really want to get out there, like any kind of message to people?
I mean, the thing that always shows up for me is just to invite people to take a look at the possibility that they came into the world as a whole and perfect being, that they're literally, you know, a particle of the universe. I mean, to really understand who and what we are, to know, to look at a small infant and to look at their perfection, and to realize that that's who we were at one point. And we have been programmed by the world, consciously and unconsciously, to believe that we're limited or broken or damaged or not good enough. And all of that has kept us small. And so the greatest gift of humility is to know our own light. The greatest act of arrogance is to think we're broken. And sometimes I think our culture has that reversed. And so to understand that who we really are is light beings, that is a profound message that I think so many of us are saying. And I used to have an intellectual understanding of that. Well, of course. But to actually feel that, that is such a beautiful experience. It's like I really am transported back to my pre-programmed human when I was just filled with joy, right? Nothing to learn, as you said so beautifully, more about unlearning and returning to who we are.
I think that's so beautiful. The idea of like looking at an infant and knowing that they're completely worthy and whole. And yeah, like the odds that you were even born right now are so astronomical. Like you're special and you're here for a reason, and we would be missing something without your presence, right? And to look at every person like that, so beautiful. I just appreciate you so much. This has been such an incredible conversation. And you know, the people who have gotten to work with you in recovery are so blessed to have crossed your path and worked with you. And I hope there's more people in recovery with a similar mindset. I'm glad you're helping, you know, quote unquote, train people. And I'm sure people want to know how they can connect with you and read your books and find you online. So if you want to just take a moment and share all that.
Yeah, absolutely. TJWoodward.com. That's the best place. You'll find my books there, my socials, and I would love to stay connected with everyone. I send out a daily inspirational quote, which I love doing. I put them all in ahead of time, so I get them myself as part of my own practice. So it's a nice little daily reminder, you know, to remember who we really are.
Amazing. And I will have all of your information in the show notes as well. So if you're listening, please, if there is someone you know who's in recovery or you think could just use this uplifting message, please send it to them. Like, comment, share, subscribe. Let's all help lift humanity up. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a beautiful rest of your day.